Blessings of the Triple Gem, Theruvan Saranai. This is part three of our Bhujanga series. Let's begin by paying homage to the Triple Gem. We can bow our heads and Anjali. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dhamma. Homage to the Noble Sangha. We are grateful to the Buddha and the Noble Ones for teaching us this Noble Dhamma. And we strive to be suvicca, easy to instruct, so we can uplift our minds to understand, develop, and realize this noble Dhamma. In part one of this Bhujanga series, we have looked at an introduction and overview of the Buddha's teachings on the seven factors of enlightenment. In part two, we took a more in-depth look into the seven factors of enlightenment, and this was particularly through the Sila Sutta. And in that teaching, there was a clear progressive pathway for developing the seven factors of enlightenment, with the Buddha's explanation showing how each factor of enlightenment in the sequence becomes conditioned for the next one until all factors have been activated and can be developed further. In this next session on the Bhujangas, we'll be addressing some of the questions that have come up on developing and practicing the Bhujangas, also known as the factors of enlightenment. So let's begin. The first question is it possible to develop the Bhujangas at work or while going about daily activities? The short answer would be no, because development of the Bhujangas is heavily inclined towards enlightenment and the ending of all suffering. When we're at work or going about our daily activities, this is not the appropriate time to develop the Bhujangas. Some of you may have heard me say many times, when we're at work, we do the work. That's what we're paid for. And when we go about our daily activities, fulfilling roles and responsibilities, that should be our focus in order to ensure we attend to things as needed and to get things done, and so our lives move quite smoothly. Now, if we try to mix in spiritual practice and particularly the development of the Bhujangas at an inappropriate time, it can really mess things up, both externally and internally. We could potentially mess our work up and cause unnecessary problems with people at work, or worse, lose our job and our source of income. And we may not be able to properly focus and concentrate on responsibilities towards family, friends, and community. There may be unnecessary hindrances or guilt in the mind. And we can also become quite forgetful and negligent towards our duties in everyday life. And these errors will often lead to other kinds of suffering, which is not what we want. So this is not what the Buddha would have recommended, particularly for lay practitioners. And so we can look at a few suttas that support this and demonstrate what the Buddha actually recommended. The first sutta from the Sila Sutta, and this is what we examined in part two on the Bhujanga series. Right at the beginning of that teaching, the Buddha highlights the importance of physical and mental withdrawal or seclusion from the world in order to develop the factors of enlightenment. So the Buddha stated, by associating with those who are accomplished in virtue, accomplished in concentration, accomplished in wisdom, accomplished in liberation, and accomplished in knowledge and vision of liberation. And he said it was helpful. And the reason is because when one has heard the Dhamma from them, one dwells withdrawn by way of two kinds of withdrawal, so withdrawal of the body and withdrawal of mind. And dwelling thus withdrawn, one recollects the Dhamma and thinks it over. So the Pali word, as we went through, withdrawal is vupakasena, which can be translated as separation, seclusion, or even solitude. And the Buddha emphasizes these two kinds of withdrawal, so the physical withdrawal, seclusion, so kaya, vupakasena, meaning we make time away from our usual activities. And once we have fulfilled our duties and responsibilities, we go on retreat, spend time in a conducive environment to learn the Dhamma and practice it. And also, pretty much, we're able to spend time alone to do that. When it comes to mental withdrawal or seclusion, citta or vupakasena, the Buddha says we're meant to purify the mind of hindrances, defilements, mental stains, and practice sense restraints so we can sustain the mind free of those things. And we develop the higher training, including developing the jhanas, realizing the formless attainments and even noble attainment. So this is one instance where the Buddha clearly emphasized developing bodhicittas when we're able to withdraw or find solitude away from our usual activities, duties, and responsibilities, and also work, and put our full attention to developing the bodhicittas. And what is stated in the Sila Sutta is also supported by what the Buddha has taught in the Pariyaya Sutta. So this is Sanyutta Nikaya, discourse number 52 of chapter 46. And this is in reference, it's a quite long sutta, but what we've pulled out here is in relation to the enlightenment factor of energy, so virya sambojanga. And the Buddha states here, whatever bodily energy there is the enlightenment factor of energy. Whatever mental energy there is also the enlightenment factor of energy. Thus, what is spoken of concisely as the enlightenment factor of energy becomes by this method of exposition twofold. So the link may not seem obvious upon first reading, but if we understand the gist of the Buddha's teachings, we can see that bodily and mental energy is linked with bodily and mental withdrawal, seclusion, or solitude. So bodily energy is aroused only when we have fulfilled our usual duties and responsibilities in the world, and that includes work. And therefore, we can make time to withdraw, take solitude for spiritual practice. And mental energy is aroused when we make unwavering effort to develop the right concentration, including entering into the higher concentrations, such as the jhana, which means we're able to abandon unskilled states. So 10 unskilled states, hindrances, defilements, and so on, and therefore develop the skilled states. And that gets more refined as you continue to develop the jhanas when you start to realize and penetrate Dhamma that there's nowhere you can abide, including in those states, but you penetrate it by actually going through them and seeing that for yourself, that it's not lasting, that there is sickness in the mind, even in those states. So together, both bodily and mental energy is how we arouse and develop the enlightenment factor of energy. So the Buddha does not say we can develop this particular enlightenment factor of energy in any other way. So it's not while we're working or going about our duties. And we've referenced the Piti Sutta. So this is Anguttara Nikaya, chapter 5, discourse number 176 before. And this is where the Buddha encouraged Anathapindika and 500 lay followers to cultivate seclusion or solitude, and he expounded the benefits. So what the Buddha had said was, you should not be content merely with this much, thinking we have presented robes, arms, food, lodgings, and medicines and provisions for the sick to the Sangha of bhikkhus. Therefore, householders, you should train yourselves thus. How can we, from time to time, enter and dwell in the rapture of solitude? It is in such a way you should train yourselves. And then, of course, Venerable Sariputta explained the five benefits of cultivating rapture, born of seclusion or solitude. And I think the key point is that when we withdraw from our usual activities, and this includes wholesome giving activities, we are able to withdraw from the world of sensuality. So we get the opportunity to really find solitude from the pleasure and pain or happiness and sadness of sensuality, as well as the pain and pleasure or happiness and sadness of the unwholesome, doing the wrong things. And we also don't get to see this clearly unless we withdraw and find solitude to practice. And so when we do so, only then do we also overcome the pain connected with the wholesome, because we're making effort, we're applying energy towards the meditation, developing the mind, and developing the path that leads to the ending of suffering. And of course, there are other sutta references that we've looked at before on solitude that can also be mentioned as well. One is from the Mahasunyata Sutta, and this is Majjhima Nikaya, discourse number 122. And when speaking to Venerable Ananda, the Buddha stated, Ananda, one does not shine by delighting in company, by taking delight in company, by devoting himself to delight in company, by delighting in society, by taking delight in society, by rejoicing in society. Indeed, Ananda, it is not possible that one who delights in company takes delight in company, and so on, will ever obtain at will, without trouble or difficulty, the bliss of renunciation, the bliss of seclusion, the bliss of peace, the bliss of enlightenment. But it can be expected that when one lives alone, withdrawn from society, One will obtain at will without trouble or difficulty the bliss of renunciation, the bliss of seclusion, the bliss of peace, the bliss of enlightenment. Indeed, Ananda, it is not possible that a bhikkhu who delights in company and so on will ever enter upon and abide in either the deliverance of mind that is temporary and delectable, or in the deliverance of mind that is perpetual and unshakable. But it can be expected that when a bhikkhu lives alone, he will enter upon and abide in either deliverance of mind that is temporary and delectable, or in the deliverance of mind that is perpetual and unshakable. So when we're working and when we're fulfilling roles and responsibilities, we're part of company, we're part of society, we're focused on worldly matters and things. So we're away from renunciation, seclusion, peace, enlightenment. And so that gives support for not doing cultivating bhujangas when we're out in the world, because we're meant to be focusing on those other things. And it's difficult to lift the mind when we're meant to be fulfilling other duties and responsibilities. And one more that I'd share is the Parviveka Sutta. This is Anguttara Nikaya, chapter 3, discourse number 93. And the Buddha stated in this particular discourse, in this Dhamma and discipline, there are three kinds of solitude for a bhikkhu. What three? Here, a bhikkhu is virtuous. He has abandoned immorality and remains secluded from it. Two, he holds right view. He has abandoned wrong view and remains secluded from it. Three, he is one whose taints are destroyed. He has abandoned the taints and remains secluded from them. And so this particular sutta is very important for those who truly want to practice towards the ending of suffering. However, even for those who live the lay life, there's much to take away from this teaching, because firstly, it's difficult to be virtuous and abandon immorality when leading the lay life. There are constant challenges. And so that's why one needs to take time each day or over the weekend, or to block off specific days and withdraw to take solitude for spiritual practice. And then secondly, when we're out in the world, we don't often have the right view, and it's very difficult to establish right view most of the time. For example, there are mental corruptions that are active, and we see and believe through the lens of beauty, the lens of permanency, the lens of pleasure. And of course, it's fit to be regarded as me and mine. So that's what drives us throughout the day. And hence why we need to withdraw and find solitude to recall the Buddha's words and follow his instructions. And that is to establish the right view and progress from there. Thirdly, it's not possible to destroy the taints if we value external things in the world, if we make those external things our priority. So when we're at work, we're prioritizing the making of money. When we're fulfilling roles and responsibilities, we're looking at, you know, our companions and helping them out and things like that. So what happens is, if we don't make time to withdraw from the world, then we would be unable to be secluded from the taints, because we're unable to abandon them. Instead, we would keep activating the taints. And so that means the ending of suffering is far away. And so there are more sutta references, but I think that's probably enough to answer the first question. The next question is, can someone arouse the bhujangas without any desire for enlightenment? Now, when we immerse in the Buddha's teachings on the bhujangas throughout the Pali Canon, there is undoubtedly a clear pathway towards enlightenment or nibbana. When we went through part one of this Bhujanga series, we highlighted across a number of discourses how the Buddha taught that when we develop to fulfillment the factors of enlightenment, that they lead to the destruction of craving. And with the destruction of craving comes the destruction of karma. And with the destruction of karma comes the destruction of suffering. And we also saw that the Buddha says the Bhujangas are the makers of vision, the makers of knowledge. They promote the growth of wisdom, and we're free from vexation. And so this leads towards nibbana. We also saw that the Buddha said they lead to utter revulsion, to dispassion, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to the destruction of craving. And he's also said that the bhujangas lead to the realization of the fruit of true knowledge and liberation, to the complete ending of suffering, to the destruction of the taints. And also in other suttas, it says it leads to the path crushing the army of Mara. And in part two of this Bhujanga series, we highlighted the Kundaliya Sutta. And in that teaching, the Buddha, He showed the development of Bhujangas leads to development of true knowledge and liberation, which leads to enlightenment. So if we again refer to the Bhikkhu Sutta, so Sanyutta Nikaya, chapter 46, discourse number 5, where a certain bhikkhu asked the Buddha about the factors of enlightenment and in what sense are they called factors of enlightenment, the Buddha's answer was very clear. The Buddha said, they lead to enlightenment, bhikkhu, therefore they are called the factors of enlightenment. Here, bhikkhu, one develops the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, which is based upon seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, maturing, and release. And then the same thing is said for all seven factors of enlightenment, so the other six as well. So, seclusion, dispassion, cessation, and maturing and release are key terms associated with the development of the Bhujangas. So, in Pali, Vivekanisitang, Viraganisitang, Nirodhanisitang, and Vasagga Parinaminang. Parinamim. So, seclusion or solitude confirms the need for withdrawal from the world in order to practice on one's own. And dispassion means we abandon lust for sensual pleasures. Cessation means we practice for the cessation of craving or attachment. And maturing and release means we prioritize and keep nourishing the Bhujangas and keep denourishing the hindrances. So, from a practical perspective, what is clear is that if we develop the Bhujangas, we're able to maintain the right view when the Bhujangas have been aroused and developed. So it's possible for us to keep sickness of the mind and the mental states at bay. And these factors of enlightenment work hand in hand with the other Bodhipakya dhammas or enlightenment factors, and also noble attainment if one has realized path and fruit. And if one has abandoned some of the taints, it makes it possible not to go back and activate them again. At least for the meditation, because one is seeing clearly with wisdom. One has penetrated certain Dhamma with wisdom, and that wisdom is active. And so when the Buddha goes on to say, while one is developing these seven factors of enlightenment, one's mind is liberated from the taint of sensuality, from the taint of existence, from the taint of ignorance. When it is liberated, there comes the knowledge, it's liberated. And one understands, destroyed is birth, the holy life has been lived, what had to be done has been done, there is no more for this state of being. They lead to enlightenment, bhikkhu, therefore they are called factors of enlightenment. So this is a pretty good explanation from the Buddha that one cultivates these Bhujangas for enlightenment. And if you remember, the Buddha used the simile of the rafters of a peaked house for the Bhujangas. So this is in the Kutagara Sutta, Sanyutta Nikaya, chapter 46, discourse number 7. And the Buddha said, bhikkhus, just as all the rafters of a peaked house slant, slope, and incline towards the roof peak, so too, when a bhikkhu develops and cultivates the seven factors of enlightenment, he slants, slopes, and inclines towards Nibbana. When we contemplate this particular simile, we see it's impossible to slant, slope, and incline towards anything other than Nibbana. So, this is the case if we are developing the Bhujangas correctly, in accordance with the Buddha's instructions or insight pathways in these discourses. Now, that being said, if one does not correctly arouse the Bhujangas, this means that one is not following the Buddha's instructions and therefore not penetrating the Dhamma with wisdom. Then in that case, it wouldn't lead to Nibbana nor the desire for Nibbana. The correct teachings on the Bhujangas and the proper practice to arouse and develop them have a very strong sense and knowledge that Nibbana is the only truth that doesn't deceive and that it culminates in the ending of suffering, all suffering. So Nibbana becomes the true goal of one's practice when one is developing the Bhujangas. One has a taste of it through following the Buddha's instructions and has no doubt, even if enlightenment hasn't yet been realized. And also, there's this discourse called the Tanhakaya Sutta. This is Sanyutta Nikaya, chapter 46, discourse number 26. It says, when the Bhujangas are developed based upon seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, maturing and release, which is vast, exalted, measureless, without ill will, craving is abandoned. With the abandoning of craving, kamma is abandoned. With the abandoning of kamma, suffering is abandoned. Thus, with the destruction of craving comes destruction of kamma. With the destruction of karma comes the destruction of suffering. So we can see through these suttas and more, by correct development of the Bhujangas, Nibbana would be the only goal. So the next question is it possible to develop the Bhujangas by hearing teachings of someone other than the Buddha? So the Buddha's answer would be no. And in the Pali Canon, there are instances where followers of other teachers or traditions would tell the Buddha or the noble disciples of the Buddha that they too also teach the Dhamma to their disciples as the Buddha teaches it. And the noble disciples would return to the Buddha and ask the Buddha to confirm what is the distinction, disparity, or difference between Buddha Dhamma and all these others. And so in relation to the Bhujangas, there is a discourse called the Pariyaya Sutta, and we've mentioned it earlier, so Samyutta Nikaya, chapter 46, discourse number 52, where this actually happens. And this is in regard to hindrances and factors of enlightenment. So if we now take a look at the Pariyaya Sutta, an extract from it, it says, then in the morning, a number of bhikkhus, dressed and taking their bowls and robes, entered Savatthi for alms. Then it occurred to them, it is still too early to walk for alms in Savatthi. Let us go to the park of the wanderers of other sects. Then those bhikkhus went to the park of the wanderers of other sects. They exchanged greetings with those wanderers, and when they had concluded their greetings and cordial talk, sat down to one side. The wanderers then said to them, friends, the ascetic Gautama teaches the Dhamma to his disciples thus. Come, bhikkhus, abandon the five hindrances, the corruptions of the mind that weaken wisdom, and develop correctly the seven factors of enlightenment. We too teach the Dhamma to our disciples thus. Come, friends, abandon the five hindrances, the corruptions of the mind that weaken wisdom, and develop correctly the seven factors of enlightenment. So, friends, what here is the distinction, the disparity, the difference between the ascetic Gautama and us, that is, regarding the one Dhamma teaching and the other, regarding the one manner of instruction and the other? Then those bhikkhus neither delighted in nor rejected the statement of those wanderers. Without delighting in it, without rejecting it, they rose from their seats and left, thinking, we shall learn the meaning of this statement in the presence of the Blessed One. Then when those bhikkhus had walked for alms in Savatthi and had returned from alms round, after their meal they approached the Blessed One. Having paid homage to him, they sat down to one side and reported to him the entire discussion between those wanderers and themselves. The Blessed One said, bhikkhus, when wanderers of other sects speak thus, they should be asked, friends, is there a method of exposition by means of which the five hindrances become 10 and the seven factors of enlightenment become 14? Being asked thus, those wanderers would not be able to reply, and further, they would meet with vexation. For what reason? Because that would not be within their domain. I do not see anyone, bhikkhus, in this world with its devas, Mara, and Brahma, in this generation with its ascetics and Brahmins, its devas and humans, who could satisfy the mind with an answer to these questions, except the Tathagata or a disciple of the Tathagata, or one who has heard it from them. So specific to the Bhujangas, the Buddha talks about the seven factors of enlightenment becoming 14. So the Pariyaya Sutta is quite long because it also covers how the five hindrances become 10. So the extract from the discourse that we'll take a quick look at is on the method of exposition for the seven factors of enlightenment becoming 14. And it's a very important teaching and quite powerful as a sutta meditation for further developing Bhujangas. We won't go into detail here because it deserves and needs a separate Dhamma session. But we'll briefly look at how the seven become 14. So the Buddha says, and what bhikkhus is the method of exposition by means of which the seven factors of enlightenment become 14? So the Buddha says, whatever mindfulness there is of things internal is the enlightenment factor of mindfulness. Whatever mindfulness there is of things external is also the enlightenment factor of mindfulness. Thus, what is spoken of concisely as the enlightenment factor of mindfulness becomes by this method of exposition twofold. So we already know that we need to establish the four establishments of mindfulness, the satipatthana, to rouse the enlightenment factor of mindfulness. So this is where we make the distinction between the internal body and the external gross body. Now, if we penetrate the Dhamma correctly, then we would understand that the external and internal are to be treated the same, having investigated and contemplated them wisely. Now, if you have developed the Buddha's teachings correctly, then you will know what this means. And then the Buddha says, whenever one discriminates things internally with wisdom, examines them, makes an investigation of them, that is the enlightenment factor of discrimination of states, or otherwise called investigation of the truth. Whenever one discriminates things externally with wisdom, examines them, makes an investigation of them, that is also the enlightenment factor of discrimination of states. Thus, what is spoken of concisely as the enlightenment factor of discrimination of states becomes by this method of exposition twofold. So, similarly, we can discriminate, examine, and fully investigate the Dhamma both internally and externally. And this is certainly connected with the understanding of the arising and passing away phenomena of the internal and external body as part of the enlightenment factor of mindfulness. So it's an extension of it. And then the Buddha says, whatever bodily energy there is the enlightenment factor of energy. Whatever mental energy there is also the enlightenment factor of energy. Thus, what is spoken of concisely as the enlightenment factor of energy becomes by this method of exposition twofold. So we examined this earlier with the answer to the first question on whether it's possible to develop the Bhujangas at work or while doing our daily activities. And remember, we went through how physical and mental withdrawal or solitude is needed. And this is linked with what the Buddha is saying here about bodily energy and mental energy to arouse the enlightenment factor of energy. And then the Buddha says, whatever rapture there is, accompanied by thought and examination, is the enlightenment factor of rapture. And whatever rapture there is without thought and examination is also the enlightenment factor of rapture. Thus, what is spoken of concisely as the enlightenment factor of rapture becomes by this method of exposition twofold. So, here the enlightenment factor of rapture is accompanied by thought and examination, as well as without thought and examination. And the one that is accompanied by thought and examination is linked with the training in higher thought, and that is rooted in non-greed. And the one without thought and examination is linked with the training in higher wisdom, and so that is rooted in non-delusion. So when you understand this deeper Dhamma, you will understand what the Buddha means here. So that's all I'll say on that one for now. And then the fourth thing that the Buddha says is whatever tranquility of body there is the enlightenment factor of tranquility. Whatever tranquility of mind there is also the enlightenment factor of tranquility. Thus, what is spoken of concisely as the enlightenment factor of tranquility becomes by this method of exposition twofold. So here we can understand that tranquility of body requires physical withdrawal or solitude, and tranquility of mind requires understanding of sickness of the mind and the mental states, including the higher concentrations. And so deeper contemplation of aging and sickness really helps here. Then the Buddha says, whatever concentration that is accompanied by thought and examination is the enlightenment factor of concentration. Whatever concentration there is without thought and examination is also the enlightenment factor of concentration. Thus, what is spoken of concisely as the enlightenment factor of concentration becomes by this method of exposition twofold. So, this is connected with the Dhamma understood to arouse the enlightenment factor of rapture. And in both cases, one realizes the importance of not getting attached to the concentration that arises accompanied by thought and examination, nor the concentration that arises without thought and examination. So, there's deeper Dhamma in this as well. And then lastly, the Buddha says, whatever equanimity there is regarding things internal is the enlightenment factor of equanimity. And whatever equanimity there is regarding things external is also the enlightenment factor of equanimity. Thus, what is spoken of concisely as the enlightenment factor of equanimity becomes by this method of exposition twofold. So this culminates in equanimity regarding things internal and external. And it's connected with all the other factors of enlightenment. So, if we develop this correctly at the point of death, if we haven't realized Nibbana, then this is where we kind of meet the pointy end of the practice of the Bhujangas and the rest of the other Bodhipakya Dhammas. What is most important is If we develop these bojangas correctly, we would have equanimity towards internal and external bodies, so we give them up. This means we no longer seek existence, therefore, rebirth is ended. And we focus on the ending of suffering. We focus on Nibbana as our ultimate goal. So, there's probably some of you may understand what I've just gone through briefly. Some of you may not, but at least you get the gist or an overview of what the Buddha intends when he talks about that others would not be able to expound on these enlightenment factors, even if they say that they are teaching these things. So this is how the seven factors of enlightenment become 14. So based on this discourse, it is apparent that most would be vexed, as the Buddha stated, because when they're asked that question, they wouldn't be able to explain it, nor would it be in their domain. Certain dhammas, including other sutta meditations, need to be understood before we can fully examine the Pariyaya Sutta. But it is a very important sutta in the proper development of the Bojangas. And if this Dhamma has been penetrated, it's very helpful at the point of death. So, this is how the Buddha answers the question whether it is possible to develop the Bojangas by hearing the teachings of someone other than the Buddha. And of course, his answer would be no. The next question is how are Bojangas aroused through developing the other sutta meditation? So, once we understand the fundamentals of how the Bojangas are aroused and developed, it's possible to see how they are aroused or activated in many other sutta meditations that have insight pathways with instructions from the Buddha. So, meditations like the four nutriments, the four modes of practice, and many other sutta meditations, you can see it. And so, to answer this question, we'll look at an example. So let's look at the first doorway to Nibbana, which we've examined before, and we also know it as the first profitable direction or painful practice with slow realization. So with this insight pathway, the Buddha asks us to contemplate one, the unattractiveness of the body, two, also perceiving repulsiveness of food, three, perceiving non-delight in the entire world, four, contemplating impermanence in all conditioned phenomena. And then five, that we have well established internally the perception of death. So when we contemplate any or all of these subjects, it helps us to arouse the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, so Satisambhojanga in Pali. And we reach the first jhana if we have contemplated this correctly. So this is what arouses the enlightenment factor of rapture, Pirthisambhojanga. Then when we contemplate the arising and passing away phenomena of form as part of this first establishment of mindfulness and the enlightenment factor of investigation of truth is aroused. So the Dhammavicchayasambhojanga. So if we have direct insight into at least one of the links independent origination as part of that contemplation, then we reach the first abiding or heavenly abode. So this is where we touch Nibbana for the first time. And the enlightenment factor of rapture, Pirthisambhojanga, is developed further. So at this point, we have reached some mental stability and we've aroused four of the Bojangas. So we want to protect the mental stability, and we do this by preventing any unarisen, unwholesome, or unskilled states from arising. So these are sensual thoughts, ill will thoughts, and harming thoughts. So this is how we arouse the enlightenment factor of energy, so Virya. Then, when we contemplate the first noble truth of suffering, so the first wonderful and marvelous idea, this is where we ensure we have no misapprehension about pleasure in relation to birth, aging, sickness, and death. And we understand that no matter what object we take, the feelings that arise from those objects, that they all result in suffering, some kind of dukkha. And if we see this correctly, then we arouse the enlightenment factor of tranquility, so Pasatisambhojanga arises. And with that understanding, we make the determination for the truth. We have insight into the death-bound nature, the suffering nature of our predicament in samsara, that what we construct doesn't last. So our desire for what is subject to aging, sickness, and death subsides, and the desire for the attainment of the safety and lasting happiness of Nibbana arises. So then this is the concentration due to desire, which arouses the enlightenment factor of concentration, so Samadhisambhojanga. At this point, we contemplate that If we do not restrain our sense faculties, then covetousness and sadness will arise. So, abhita dominasa in Pali. If this happens, then we're back into the pleasure and pain, happiness and sadness conundrum. So, what we do is we understand we need to restrain the sense faculties, and this helps us to arouse the enlightenment factor of equanimity, upeka sampucanga. And we complete the meditation by following the remaining steps to cultivate immeasurable loving kindness. So it's important to note that the deeper our understanding of the Dhamma in each part of this insight pathway, this first doorway to Nibbana, such as seeing form with proper wisdom or understanding the links in dependent origination, penetrating the noble truth of suffering, so those are examples. The more that we understand these things with proper wisdom, that we have direct insight, then we don't just arouse the pujangas, but we start to further develop them. And so that is very, very helpful. So that's one way of answering that question. So the next question is, can we develop the bhujangas in any order? So rather than give a yes or no answer, I'd lean on the Buddha's instructions with regard to our method of development of the bhujangas. So one thing we can confirm is the bhujangas are usually listed in the same order throughout the Pali Canon. So usually starts with mindfulness, enlightenment factor, then investigation of the truth, then energy, then rapture, then tranquility, then concentration, then equanimity. So those are the enlightenment factors. So there must be a reason for this. And yes, it could be for ease of memorization, or like the teaching in the Sila Sutta that we went through in part two of this Bhojanga series, it could be because there's a progressive pathway for developing the Bhojangas that is attuned. And there are similar teachings in the Bhojanga Sanyutta that keep the same order for developing the Bhojangas. But in any case, if we are easy to instruct, so obedient to the Buddha, then we would follow the Buddha's instructions. So depending on the discourse, if the instructions follow the established sequence, or if they have a different one, then we would develop the bhujangas in accordance with those instructions from the Buddha. And this is particularly important for those who are less experienced in developing the spiritual path and practice, who may not be skilled at uplifting the mind and will not be skilled at developing the bhujangas. In contrast, one could say also that those with noble attainment, so those who have attained path and fruit, would find it easier to uplift the mind, especially those who frequently practice and lift the mind with attainment. So when this is the case, it doesn't take as much effort to arouse the bhujangas, and it can seem like one develops them in any order. However, it's more likely that the process is simply quicker and the progressive development is the same. So that's something to bear in mind. One of the key suttas that is often quoted in relation to the question about developing them in any order is the Vata Sutta. So this is Samyutta Nikaya, chapter 46, discourse number 4. And we've referred to this before. And this is where Venerable Sariputta is talking to the bhikkhus about being able to dwell in any of the factors of enlightenment at any time of the day that he wants. So Venerable Sariputta gives this simile of being able to wear different colored clothes at different times of the day. Let me just read out this extract. Suppose, friends, a king or a royal minister had a wardrobe full of differently colored clothes. Whatever suit he might want to wear in the morning, he would wear in the morning. Whatever suit he might want to wear during the middle of the day, he would wear during the middle of the day. Whatever suit he might want to wear in the evening, he would wear in the evening. So too, friends, whichever of these seven factors of enlightenment I want to dwell in during the morning, I dwell in that factor of enlightenment during the morning. Whichever I want to dwell in during the middle of the day, I dwell in that factor of enlightenment during the middle of the day. Whichever I want to dwell in during the evening, I dwell in that factor of enlightenment during the evening. If one is not skilled or proficient at arousing these bhujangas, then that person needs to arouse all seven of them. And only then would you be able to move between the enlightenment factors, like one is changing into these different colored clothes. So that's for one who is not skilled or proficient in the bhujangas. So you arouse all of them initially, and then after that, you can move between them, any which one. Now, if one is skilled or proficient or who has noble attainment, so path and fruit, then it may be possible to arouse or activate them by wisely contemplating, so applying yonisomanasikara to the factor of enlightenment that one wishes to dwell in and move from one to another. So in this case, what we can understand from this is that certain dhammas will have been well penetrated with wisdom, and the bhujangas that have been frequently practiced and developed will also give a sense of ease. So the skill of Venerable Sariputta in the bhujangas meant that he would know, let this enlightenment factor, let, may I dwell in this enlightenment factor, or he might know this enlightenment factor that he's cultivated or developed is measureless, or he would know it's been fully perfected, or he would know while it persists, he understands that it persists, and when it abates, then he would understand that it has abated. So he's a very skilled and proficient person in the Bhujangas. So one would expect that because he was one of the chief disciples of the Buddha, and he was a perfected one. So most of us don't have this level of skill and proficiency in the Bhujangas. So it's very good to know that, and also to know where the bar is set. And it's very, very high. So when he gives this teaching, he's coming from that very high bar. And so we need to correctly arouse all the bhujangas and become very skilled, and also to penetrate the dhamma behind each of the bhujangas. In that way, it becomes possible for us, particularly with noble attainment, to go in and wisely contemplate any of the bhujangas and lift the mind. And so if we keep gradually developing in this way, then it becomes possible to develop them in any order. So the next question is, what is the difference between the enlightenment factors of tranquility, concentration, and equanimity? So this is a common question when it comes to the factors of enlightenment that the Buddha has grouped as calming factors. In the Argi Sutta, this is in the Bhujanga Samyutta, the Buddha gives the simile of a bonfire where a man wants to extinguish a great bonfire. And what he does is he throws wet grass, wet cow dung, and wet timber onto it. When he sprays it with water and scatters soil over it, he would be able to then extinguish the great bonfire. So this is similar to when we arouse and develop the enlightenment factors of tranquility, concentration, and equanimity, because what it does is it calms the mind down. So there is a clear distinction between these three factors of enlightenment, and we did highlight this in part two of this Bhujanga series when we went through the Sila Sutta. So in simple terms, the enlightenment factor of tranquility, the Pasadisambhujanga, is associated with tranquility of the mind and tranquility of mental states. So when we develop the mind or develop our meditation, we constantly need to ensure that our mind is not sick. And when we purify it by arousing the other bhujangas, that sickness doesn't re-enter the mind. So this sickness is largely associated with misapprehension. We have sick or corrupt perceptions, such as taking it as me and mine, thinking we can continuously fix our conditions, thinking we can construct something that lasts, that we have lasting pleasure, and so on. And so this is at the root of how we breed mental defilements. So the enlightenment factor of tranquility involves contemplation of the mind, so cittanupassana, because it's similar to how we develop the mind using Vatupama Sutta and similar teachings. When we're able to diagnose the mind, that we know when the mind and the mental states have greed, hate, or delusion, then we know that we need to tranquilize it using the proper medicine. And concentration due to investigation, Vimamsa Samadhi, that plays an important role because we don't wish to have unwholesome or unskilled states by body, speech, and mind. And we understand this with wisdom. So this is what activates the enlightenment factor of tranquility, having investigated these things. So if you're familiar with the pleasant modes of practice, so Sukhapatibhidhas, and particularly the pleasant practice with quick realization, so Sukhapatibhidha-kipalabhinaya, then you'll understand this point about Vimamsa Samadhi. For those who are not familiar, we will be delving into the pleasant practice with quick realization after we've looked at the pleasant practice with slow realization, which is coming up soon. So the enlightenment factor of concentration then, when we arouse it, this is when the body is tranquil and the mind is happy. So it is a Dhamma Niyama, something that gets activated when the enlightenment factor of tranquility is developed correctly. So this enlightenment factor of concentration is where we experience that we know that we don't want to go back to the lesser state of mind, that we don't wish to go back where the mind is less purified, that it has more greed, hatred, and delusion. So for beginners, one would wisely contemplate the pleasure or happiness of the concentration and what the Buddha has taught regarding the Four Noble Truths, that if there is pleasure, then there will be pain or suffering. So there is a flaw in our concentration if we're clinging or craving to the happiness in the mind. And for more advanced practitioners, one would develop to understand that we don't even want to abide in any of these higher concentrations. And these include the jhanas, the formless attainments, and so on, because this holds true for those who have correctly seen and understood the arising and passing away phenomena of form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness. Because even in the form jhanas, even in the formless states, which are based on feelings and perceptions, that all of these things are impermanent. So what we don't want to do is crave them, become attached to these higher concentrations. Many of the teachings that we've studied help us to discern this, including Samadhi Bhavana Sutta, Chula Sunyata Sutta, Nindya Sapaya Sutta, Vamika Sutta, and many, many more. What we realize when we do these teachings and sutta meditations is that we cannot abide or dwell in these attainments without sickness in the mind, because what happens is we fall from these states, so we're not free of suffering. So when we understand, when we penetrate this Dhamma through those meditations, what we understand is that it's not Nibbana and there's no lasting happiness in those states. And so when you get to this particular concentration, you give them up. So this is the Samadhi Sambhojanga. Whichever way one sees it, the enlightenment factor of equanimity is aroused and developed. And when we give up any attachment to the concentration, and in that way, we are giving up both pain and pleasure and wanting to abide in any sort of state. So equanimity arises, and we go to something that is more pure, more stable, and it contains the direct knowledge of having understood that. The enlightenment factor of equanimity is very important when it comes to whether one ultimately goes towards Nibbana. If one has a preference or a tendency or an attachment to certain higher concentrations, then this can be very strong in each of us. It's important to know that we've done these things before. Therefore, this is what needs to be seen, needs to be wisely contemplated and abandoned so we can develop the Bodhicitta. Or really, the Bodhicittas help us to see that. So what we can see is that there are clear differences in the enlightenment factors of tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. They don't just blend together, and they're not just different words for the same thing. Instead, there are distinctions in what Dhamma has been penetrated with wisdom and direct insight for each one, and how they are connected to each other, how they help each other. So for each of the Bhujangas, the Buddha has stated in the Nibbidabhagya Sutta, this is Samyutta Nikaya, chapter 46, discourse number 28. With a mind that has developed the enlightenment factors, so all seven, he penetrates and sunders the mass of greed that he has never before penetrated and sundered. He penetrates and sunders the mass of hatred that he has never before penetrated and sundered. He penetrates and sunders the mass of delusion that he has never before penetrated and sundered. And so what we can understand is as we keep developing the Bhujangas, there is more to be penetrated with wisdom and insight, more Dhamma to be understood. And the Bhujangas are practiced and developed in order to do this. So the final question that we'll look at is once we develop the Bhujangas, what is developed beyond them? So, in a number of suttas, including the Kundaliya Sutta that we mentioned in part two and also in the early part of this session, so Kundaliya Sutta is Samyutta Nikaya, chapter 46, discourse number 6. And also, when we've covered the Avijja Sutta, Anguttara Nikaya, chapter 10, discourse number 61, the Buddha has stated that the seven factors of enlightenment are developed and cultivated so they fulfill true knowledge and liberation. And it's also stated for the realization of the fruit of true knowledge and liberation. So when we develop the Bhujangas, it means that there is nothing obstructing the mind. There are no hindrances or corruptions of the mind that are present. And as a result of developing the Bodhicitta correctly, having wisely contemplated, and having understood the Dhamma in the process of developing the Bodhicitta, one clearly does not wish to be attached to anything, anything gross or subtle, gross being sensual things in terms of the gross things in the world, and subtle things in terms of the jhanas, the formless attainments, and more. And so one understands that if one is attached to any of those things, gross or subtle, it would keep one bound to going from birth to birth. So rebirth is not ended. And if rebirth is not ended, that means we would experience suffering. So with this knowledge, one has the clear goal for the ending of suffering, for nibbana. As a result, one is able to realize the fruit of true knowledge and liberation, which is direct knowledge or wisdom that one gains through penetrating the Dhamma, so penetrating the truth as it really is. So when this is the case, one is able to experience liberation of the mind and liberation due to wisdom. And this includes the desireless liberation, so apanicca cetta-vimutti, also emptiness liberation, so sunyata cetta-vimutti, and signless liberation, animitta cetta-vimutti. So, and there are many other liberations as well. These liberations are very helpful because they're part of the purifying process, like taking yet another step away from greed, hatred, and delusion, and another step towards nibbana. And of course, when you start to go to the liberations, you also realize that they are also still constructed. And the Buddha has stated in the Anuppada Parinibbana Sutta, so this is Sanghyutta Nikaya, chapter 45, discourse number 48. When this is realized directly for oneself, together with the abandoning of the fetters, the uprooting of the underlying tendencies, the full understanding of the cause for the destruction of the taints, knowledge and vision, one is able to realize nibbana. So this is really the pointy end of the practice when one really starts to delve deeper into really wanting to abandon any sort of craving and wanting to know how to actually uproot underlying tendencies, destroy taints, and so on and so forth. And Bodhicittas play a very important part in that process, because Bodhicittas, because one wields the mind in this particular way, not allowing the mind to get sick, one actually will not go back to activate taints if they have been given up. So they're very, very helpful in that respect. So hopefully that helps to answer some of those questions. So we've now come to the end of part three on the factors of enlightenment or Bodhicittas. There were some questions that were asking about teachings of other teachers and other methods, and I've refrained from addressing those questions because that's not in my remit to do so, to critique other teachers and to bring confusion to the people that are looking at the sutta meditations. So I've left those there. If those questions are very important to you, then please email directly, specifically what you want to know, and I'll see whether I can address them directly back to you. So we can end our session with gratitude to the Buddha for all these teachings and any assistance or help from the noble ones. So we can share the merit with all sentient beings. May all beings be happy and well. May all beings be free from suffering. Blessings of the Triple Gem. Dharuan Saranai. Wishing you well.